this is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, and you're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont Public Radio went on the air for the first time 40 years ago. It was August 13th, to be precise, but we're celebrating all year long. In 1978, VPR teamed up with NPR to produce the documentary Maple Sugar Time for All Things Considered. The program looked at the sugaring industry from the perspective of the people who tap the trees, boil, and bottle. As part of the special, Betty Smith, still part of the VPR team today, spoke with some young students at the Children's House School in Hanover, New Hampshire. This young boy offered to explain what happens. First, you tap the tree.
And then hang up the hooks. Let the sap come through. And then you put up the buckets. And then you wait for a few days. And then when the buckets are full, you empty the buckets and you collect the sap and you put the buckets back up. And you keep doing it and doing it and doing it until you have so much sap that it fills up a can or a bottle or anything of it. And then someday when you want to have pancakes for breakfast, you make the pancakes and then you put the maple syrup on it.
All right, he might have missed just a couple steps, but you get the idea. That's from Maple Sugar Time, a story recorded and aired in 1978 on VPR. In some ways, you could hear the same thing on our air today, but VPR has also changed quite a bit in the last four decades. Today on the program, we are joined by President and CEO Robin Turneau to look at the past and future of VPR. Robin, it's nice to have you back on the show. It's been a while.
Jane, it's great to be here today. Thank you.
So this is not only VPR's 40th anniversary, but it's also the 10th anniversary this year of the creation of two distinct networks. So we have the classical network, VPR Classical, and we have VPR, which is now all news and programming and some music. What's been the result of that split in terms of listenership and in terms of the station's finances?
It's also the 10th anniversary of Vermont Edition,
right? That's
right.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, going back to 2007 when we made that big change here, we made it for a number of reasons. We saw that when the classical music came on in the middle of the day, that the audience changed over. We're serving a different audience. And so it was important for us at that time to build out two distinct services, as you mentioned. One for classical and one for news. So we did that, and there was a time when we weren't serving some folks with classical. It was a little rough, and we certainly went through some growing pains there. But we've been able to build out the classical network ever since, and we're now at a point where we have more listeners than we've ever had before. So the whole point of that was to serve more listeners more of the time. And so the news network now has more listeners. I think back then the listenership total was about 151,000 or so. The combined total of the listening to VPR and VPR Classical is more like 210,000 today, 10 years later, not to mention the vast audience that we have online as well.
Right. That's not included. And the online listeners are not included in that statistic.
Unless they're streaming and they're counted in that way. But sometimes they do if they're counted by Nielsen, the folks who measure radio listening. And if you're streaming, they can actually check off that, yes, they're listening. So sometimes they're counted. How's that?
And it costs more, though, to do this. Has it been does it basically come out in the wash that the more listeners, the more givers, the more expenses, the more people are paying for it?
In a way, yes, the higher the public service that VPR provides, or the greater the public service, the more people who engage with it, then as the formula goes, the more people who support VPR. VPR's support from our members and from our underwriters right now is the highest it's ever been as well. So the support is there. And I think that's, for us, the measure of relevance. The relevance is VPR more relevant now than we were 10 years ago to more people. And I think the resounding answer to that is yes, we are. The folks who like classical music have their full-time 24-hour classical network, and they support VPR during membership drives. We've got a full array of underwriters on VPR Classical like we have on VPR News as well.
You haven't been around for all 40 years of VPR.
Just 28.
Almost. Yeah, 28 is a pretty long run with one station. So what would you say the biggest difference is in the almost 3 decades that you've been with VPR?
When I joined VPR in 1989, we had just put the Rutland station on the air. And of course, we didn't have a website at all. So a very different time then. To be able now to have covered the whole state with the Classical Network and the VPR News Network, as well as have an incredibly robust digital network or digital service with podcasting. I mean, the changes are extraordinary that we've seen over the last 30 years, really. But for me, it does come down to that bottom line of how are we serving the public, the people who are within our region, Vermont and the borders around Vermont. And I would say that our public service right now is the highest it's ever been.
You mentioned that when you first started, VPR didn't have a web page.
Right.
Because of course it didn't have a web page. That is probably one of the biggest changes, and it's a change that VPR had to adjust to. It wasn't our change, but you know, the internet era and new technology and the digital presence and digital programming, digital first programming, the myriad ways people can get their news and information now is so different than it was even 3 decades ago. How has VPR adjusted to that?
Well, you're right on, Jane, that the way that people communicate is different, the way that they get their media, the way that they, the technology that they use. Everything has changed. And so for VPR, it is that the challenge, you might say, of serving the people who are the folks who just turn on their radio in the morning and there it is, but also serving the digital audience at the same time and making sure that we can be on whatever platform it is that they are wanting to engage with VPR content on, whether that is through Facebook or whether it's through our website or through our apps or through podcasting. So it's the balance right now of making sure that we're serving both audiences often that overlap as well, but I, you know, as we progress more into podcasting and on demand, as we call it, so that it's more less listening to the stream that VPR provides, and more of a listener going and seeking what they want in that moment, whether it is a podcast or whether it's a story that they missed, and making sure it's available, it's easy to find, and that there's also more to that. It's not just what you hear on the air. There's build outs that support our stories. There are stories that are digital only, as we say. They're not. They haven't made it to broadcast. You know, it's an interesting time because I frequently hear from people who say that they don't visit our website because they listen to VPR all the time and they don't feel the need to because they don't think that there's much more there. But there is so much more there these days, and I think that's part of the challenge of being a public radio station is that we're by some still perceived as radio when we're actually a media organization.
Does that though then leave VPR vulnerable to being spread too thin? I mean, is VPR trying to be everything to every person and have something for everyone, no matter where they are and what their interests are?
That's a really good question. And it is something that we grapple with all the time is where do we put our resources? Because it's so easy to chase everything and every new technology and say, we have to be here, we have to be there. And because that's where listeners want to engage with us. So it is a question about spreading too thin. But we're trying right now to create that right balance between broadcast and digital and not even think of them in those two distinctly different ways anymore, but really, how can we best tell the story that we're trying to tell? Is it through photos and video, or is it through broadcast and online? And so it can be challenging though, and we've been doing more with video, for instance, with Live from the Fort, recognizing that those are serving a different audience, different need of listeners, but they're also very time consuming to do. So we're right now looking at that and saying, is this the right way for us to be spending a lot of time and energy to produce as many Live from the Forts as we are?
And how would you describe the strategy that VPR is thinking of going into the future on how to strike that right balance?
Well, we are, have a strategic plan right now where we're really focused on innovating in news and investigative reporting. So we have a lot of focus to what we're doing. Our focus, of course, is podcasting as well. You're involved in the But Why podcast, and congratulations on going up for 50,000 subscribers just recently. So that's incredible growth over the past year. So it's really trying to strengthen and focus VPR so that we don't get spread too thin. We have over the years tried to say yes and be a great partner to the community anytime we can. And we're recognizing that we can't do that any longer. We really have to be careful and choose the right ways for VPR to invest our people, our time, and the resources that people contribute to us. So it's a strategy through looking at our strategic plan, making sure that we're asking that question each and every time we make a decision about how are we using these resources to explore the whole Vermont story together, as we say, which is our new vision statement.
Can you pinpoint a decision, something that you've said no to recently that highlights what you're talking about?
Well, so if you are a reader of our blog, you will note that we have recently, as of actually this coming Saturday, 2 days from now, it'll be the end of a program that we've aired for a long time on VPR, on VPR Classical, called Passion for Opera. That's Peter Fox Smith's program. He's been a host of opera for 40 years on VPR, and we want to honor the 4 decades that he spent with presenting opera to our audience. But as we were looking at our locally hosted programs and looking at our audience numbers and a whole lot of things that went into that, we decided that that's a program that's going to be coming to an end. So the last program for A Passion for Opera is this Saturday. We will continue to air the Metropolitan Opera on VPR Classical, but that is an example of one change.
I'm talking with Robin Turneau. She's president and CEO of VPR. She's been in that position since 2009, but she's been with the station for 28 years. We're looking back at how VPR got started and some of the ways it's changed over 4 decades. Craig wrote in to say, in August of 1977, I was a public radio listener in Maine. 40 years ago, I was in Vermont. One afternoon, I attempted to find ATC on shortwave radio. When that failed, I started spinning the FM dial. Then I found All Things Considered on VPR. Happy birthday. And Dennis in Burlington says, how has the funding picture changed over the years? Public, corporate, personal, what does the future require to maintain and to expand financially?
Yeah, funding is something that we're thinking a lot about right now just because of just long-term sustainability. It has changed over the years. We, early on in our years, had more support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Right now, that's down to about 10% of our funding. Listeners might know that we don't receive any funding from the state of Vermont, and we never have. Our underwriting support right now is very strong, which is great to see. The local business economy is supporting VPR. And our membership, though, is still the lion's share about the support that we receive from the community. We have, though, been over the years thinking about how can we diversify more. A number of years ago, we had a big push to build an endowment, and VPR does have an endowment right now that does provide a couple $100,000 a year for VPR. So that's one example of how we're trying to raise funds so that it can support VPR more longer term.
How large is the endowment?
Right now, it's about $10 million. Just so that folks know how endowment works, it's not that you can spend all that at once. It's that you have some kind of a spending rate that is applied each year, whether it's 2% or 3% or 4%. So it's just a percentage of that comes into the operations for VPR each year. You might know that we finished a capital campaign recently, and a part of that capital campaign was an innovation fund, and $2 million of an innovation fund, and that is to fund innovation, to fund new programs, to new initiatives, new podcasts over the next however many years. It's not an endowment. It is a fund that we can spend down, and that is a way to also contribute to VPR for the longer term and to fund things that might not have support initially, but that we know longer term will gain support from the community.
And that innovation fund, how is it defined which projects will get approval to spend down that money? money?
That's the Innovation Fund. We work with the board on that, and it's part of the budgeting process each year. But it also allows us to be nimble. So there's a number of different ways that we can spend from that fund. But for instance, this year right now, we have funding from the Innovation Fund that is supporting the New England News Collaborative. You might have heard the reporting that we've been doing from the New England News Collaborative with Kathleen Masterson, also a program called Next on Sundays. That's all part of the New England News Collaborative that is being funded by the Innovation Fund. As an example of something new and different that we wanted to get off the ground, we're also investing in investigative reporting. We just hired Emily Corwin, who was over at New Hampshire Public Radio more recently, and she'll be able to do more longer-form reporting. I'm very excited about that project as well. And podcasting. We would like to invest in podcasting as well. The Innovation Fund is a conversation we have at the board and with the leadership team here to say, how can we best fund our strategic initiatives?
Let's go to Hester, who's calling in from Craftsbury. Hi, Hester. Go right ahead.
Hi, you guys. First of all, thank you for all you do. I can't imagine life without VPR. I want to follow up on a comment I heard. Jane, a couple weeks ago, you had Betty Smith on the air, and you were talking a bit about the history. And you guys made a really tantalizing reference to the possibility that radio theater might be returning to the airwaves. And I want to know more about that, and I want to know how I can support it and how I can be involved in it. It's something that's been near and dear to my heart and my practice for a long time.
Oh, Hester, nice to hear from you. And Robin, if you don't mind, I'll take that on.
Go
because
for
it. Betty and I were the ones who dangled that tantalizing tidbit. And, you know, Hester, really, it's at the very, very, very beginning stages. It's like at the conversation stage around the table at Vermont Edition. Our executive producer, Sam Gale Rosen, is supremely interested in radio theater. And we just think, wouldn't it be fun to do something like that? So the question for us now is, how do we do it? What might it look like? And how in the world do we put it on and fund it? Because, you know, radio theater is not cheap and it's not easy and it's very time consuming. So if you actually have ideas for us, you can send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net and we'd love to hear it. And you're not the only one who's written. We've had maybe three or four people who heard that interview where Betty said, how about radio theater? And I said, oh, yeah, we're talking about it as if it was a real thing. So maybe it will be. And Hester, you give us some good ideas for how to make it so. Thanks for calling in. Robin, are you okay with that if we do radio theater?
Go for it. Sure. Okay. I'd love to hear
Innovation
that.
Fund pitch, maybe?
Well, let's talk. Let's talk.
Pete is on the line from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Robin. I have a question that has to do with bias in the media. And let me say, I am neither a right-wing conservative or a left-wing liberal, but I personally have a sense of liberal bias in the coverage on VPR, and I know that many of my more conservative friends also perceive it, and yet very few of my liberal friends perceive a bias in the other direction. Do you have any comment? Do you have any conscious attitude in how you cover stories or what you cover?
Pete, good question. And before I turn it over to Robin, can you point to any examples where you feel that to be true? Because it's really helpful to know, you know, where are you seeing this, or is it just a feeling?
I have seen it on a number of stories over time, and I noticed this morning a friend of mine posted something on Facebook along those lines. It was much stronger than I had perceived it, but you know, that was what prompted the question.
So it sounds like for Pete, in some ways, it's just a feeling, a perception that he has. Robin, what do you think?
I'm also interested in the examples, Jane, because I think that there is just that sense of where maybe perhaps where public radio has been. I know in the early days there was certainly that perception, and probably there was some truth to that then. I think nowadays I challenge that. You know, of course, every reporter comes to every story with their own ideas, but we really try to have those not come through in the stories, of course, in our journalism. them. And so if you do have examples, I would love to hear that, because I think we're working harder than ever to make sure that we do present a balanced point of view, both here at VPR and at NPR.
Challenge that assertion.
I do challenge that assertion.
You know, Pete, I'll be really candid with you about something that we've been talking about on Vermont Edition, which, you know, may extend to the station as a whole. But one of the things that we struggle with as we do political topics is most of the leaders in the state of Vermont, the political leaders, the elected leaders, have a certain perspective. And there's not a lot of, for example, pro-Trump top statewide officials or statewide officials who support moves that the Trump administration has been making, even down to our governor, our Republican governor. So what we think about is, well, how do we do a show that doesn't feel like every time mm-hmm. it's against what the Trump administration has suggested? So we're trying to think creatively on Vermont Edition about how do we present things so that they don't just feel that way to people like you, Pete. And I really appreciate the call. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm in the studio today with VPR's own president and CEO, Robin Turneau. We're talking about the history of the station. We're talking about what the station is doing right now, and she's answering your questions. Let's go to Stefan in Brattleboro. Hi, Stefan. Go right ahead.
Hello. Great show. I love listening to it. Just was wondering if you recall the Panther players back in the late 70s, early 80s, I think, they broadcasted out of Windsor, and that was a radio drama program.
Huh. Stefan, that was before my time. I was born in 1979, so I certainly wasn't listening to them. But Robin, do you remember
them? It was before
them?
My time, too. But I do remember the tales of the Panther players. And I know that Betty Smith knows a lot more about it than I do. But I know that that was a part of VPR's early time.
And maybe a model for us to look at.
Yes.
Clearly, now we're going to have to do radio theater.
Absolutely.
I've just committed us,
Robin. For it.
We've got a note from Linda who says, I'm a sustaining member and contributed to the special campaign as well. I love VPR. But over the last couple of years, the signal in Enosburg has been getting weaker and weaker. My bedroom is on the north side of the house, and this summer I have practically had to resort to foil on rabbit ears to use my very nice Bose clock radio. Is there any help in sight?
Signal in Enosburg. Well, I'm not quite sure what's going on there, Linda, but we can check on it. We have a guide to good reception on our website, but it sounds like if you're getting out the tinfoil that you're doing everything that you can there. But we do have recommendations for special antennas. And of course, if you have a good internet connection, I would suggest streaming because it provides a really good service that way. But I can't think of anything that would have changed for your signal, especially I don't think you said what you're listening to, but I think it must be 107.9. And I don't think there's been anything that's changed over the last several months or year, even.
I can't stream very well at my house, Robin, because
yeah.
we don't have a good internet reception in addition to cell phone reception in addition to terrestrial radio reception.
That's the challenge of serving a state like Vermont. Not only broadcast wise is it challenging because we live in this beautiful mountainous state, but unfortunately those mountains get in the way of a good broadcast signal. And then to your point, Jane, there isn't necessarily good broadband service throughout Vermont. So we know that people rely on the FM signal of VPR to be their connection. And that's one of the reasons why we are still so focused on broadcast, because we recognize the importance of it in our community.
Let's go to Jim in North Hero. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on Pete. He was asked to see if he could provide some examples. I also consider myself pretty central, maybe liberal. And what I've noticed, and it's not so much on VPR, but on NPR, on call-in programs like On Point in the Morning, there seems to be a tendency to have, let's say, two left-leaning guests and one right-leaning guest. So already there's a preponderance of a slight liberal bias, which is fine with me, but I think it should be, again, coming to Pete's rescue.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, when a caller calls in and expresses kind of a left-leaning tendency, they go, okay, thanks, George, appreciate that. And if somebody calls in with a right-leaning bias, they'll go, okay, and then they'll flip it over to a left-leaning guest to say, well, what do you think about what Harry just said?
Mm-hmm.
And so the right-leaning bias gets a rebuttal, and the left-leaning is just kind of left on its own. So, as I said, it seems to be more NPR rather than VPR, but I think there is this kind of very subtle, it may not even be deliberate, but subtle, slight liberal tendency.
Jim, I really appreciate your examples. Thanks for sharing that. Robin Trenow, something, you know, to go along with what Jim is saying, for example, on Fridays on Point, Tom Ashbrook's guest roster of journalists always includes news analyst Jack Beatty. Mm-hmm. Jack Beatty is not a balanced guest on that show. So, you know, is there something to Jim's point there?
There could be something to your point, and I can definitely take a closer listen to that. I have heard comments about On Point and the way they handle calls, but I haven't heard it from this point of view here about the bias involved and whether it's a left-leaning or right-leaning bias. But you're right. On Fridays, Jane, they do have a roundtable, reporters' roundtable that often or commentators' roundtable as well, you might say. And it does include a variety of voices. I know they've been trying to bring in other voices so that there is more of a balance. But we'll look into this even more, and I'll point it out to them because it's important that any comments that we hear from our listeners here in our region, that we get those also to the folks at NPR or any of the national programs that we carry.
Lara in Burlington just posted to our Facebook page, and again, a lot of people commenting on, you know, is there a liberal bias? Where do you see it? Where are the examples? And she says, I have felt at times what may be perceived as a liberal bias, but is really more of a class bias. For instance, during a pledge drive, when someone says, just think about how much you spend on your coffee each day. Mm. I can't afford to buy coffee each day.
Yeah, good point, Laura. Thanks for that comment. We'll try to be more careful about that. It is very important. You're right that we recognize everybody's individual situations and be attentive to that, and not assume that everybody can afford a latte every day or every week. I get that. Thanks for that.
Kevin is on the line with us from Jeffersonville. Hi, Kevin.
Good afternoon. Generally, I think you, Vermont Edition, is an excellent program. Going to the bias question, I don't know if this is quite biased, but in the past, I think whenever you've had state officials on, I think they tended to be very much softball, maybe even cheerleader type interviews. I think you've gotten better about that, but I still think there's a tendency to let the state, whoever it is, present their position without really much pushback. One example yesterday, the lieutenant governor's interview. I mean, he's going on and on and on about legalizing marijuana. I think it's a real waste of the time in the legislature. I didn't hear a tremendous amount of pushback on that, or more importantly, discussion about what the legislature might be doing to address more important issues. Thank you.
Kevin, I take your point, and thanks very much for your perspective here at Loud and Clear. And we often wonder about that balance of how hard can you push without people getting turned off? And that's when, Robin, you as president don't tell us what to do, but I know that you think about the balance of the station.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, like, to your point, Jane, like, how hard can you push? How many times can we ask the same question if the politician isn't going to answer the question, for one thing? And sometimes it's just meant to showcase, or to not showcase, but to present, here is this person, here is what their points of view are, and for you as a listener to make your own decision about that, and to call into the program and challenge the guest yourself as well.
Tom is calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey there.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that as a news organization and as a journalist, it's not your job to be balanced. It's your job to present the news as it is. If by doing so you make the Republicans in this country look like idiots, well, if you're basing it all on fact, then they are indeed idiots. And as far as right-leaning, left-leaning goes, if anything, I think NPR is more of a right-leaning station than a left-leaning station. And I'll support that with some history. A few years back, everything the Republican Party said, their talking point was, the American people have spoken. Well, for days upon months upon probably years, every time I heard on the radio a Republican politician speak, that the part where he said the American people have spoken was never edited out. And that's not a fact. That's just an opinion by that. Actually, it's just a propaganda talking point by that Republican politician. And I really think the media failed the public by not editing that out.
Tom, I take your point and I hear you. It's not the media's job to paint a balanced picture. It's the media's job to show the world for what it is. I thank you for that opinion. Judy is calling in from Fayston. Judy, what are you thinking about?
Well, and I got to say, first of all, that this is the best public radio station that I've heard, the whole thing. So thank you, Robin. I would like to see, I'm wondering if VPR can bring back a non-gender-specific term, like you folks. When people refer to us as you guys, I always say, I'm not a guy, I'm a gal. And real guys wouldn't like it if they were referred to as gals, if we were addressed as you gals. So why does it have to be you guys?
All right, Judy, I take it, Robin, gender neutrality.
Judy, good point. We will try to be more careful about using the term you guys. I think that it's probably a casual term that is used without thought about how it can be perceived. So thank you for that.
Robin, we're having this conversation now, and actually we were supposed to have it earlier in August, but some of the national news overtook this conversation, so we're having it now. But in the interim, you have announced that you're leaving the station. You're leaving in March. You're going to move on to other things, which you don't know quite what they are yet. Why is this a time that feels right to you to leave VPR?
Yeah, Jane, thanks for asking. I did make the decision to leave. I have been here at VPR since we mentioned earlier, since 1989. A lot of my life, more than half my life, is spent here at VPR, 28 years. And For me, I feel like VPR is at a point where it is so strong and the service is so great at this time. It's the time that it's right for me to transition out of VPR to pursue another thing, whatever that might be in my future. But I'm committed to a really careful and thoughtful transition to my successor. And the board has undertaken the beginnings of a search for that successor. But for me, it just seemed like it just seemed like the right time for me and the organization. And I have to say, though, that it was a very hard decision to make. I absolutely love this organization. It has been an incredible part of my life for the nearly three decades that I've been here. And so I wanted to be careful and thoughtful on how I approached the decision to leave VPR. We did just finish a $10 million capital campaign, which also involved the expansion of our building. So we have this great foundation to go forward with right now. And I think it's, as I said, the right time for the organization and for me.
But a lot of people, when they leave with nothing to go to, it's because they don't like where they are. Is that the case for you?
Not at all. Absolutely. That couldn't be the opposite. It's the exact opposite. For me, I find it hard to imagine what my next step will be while I'm sitting here in this role. And I didn't want to give obviously like a 2 weeks notice or 4 weeks notice that I'm leaving. That's why because I care so much about VPR, I wanted it to be careful and thoughtful. And so that's why I gave the 7 months notice that I did, and talking to the board actually before that so they could be ready to go. I'm excited to see what's next.
Well, we wish you luck in that.
Thank you.
We're glad that you're here still till March. VPR President and CEO Robin Trudeau, thank you very much for being on the show.